Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Now, I am not reintroducing the idea of purgatory, but on the other hand, I do believe the baby was thrown out with the bathwater. With that came a belief, when you die, you're instantaneously and magically made perfect.
The soul of someone who dies immediately goes into eternity. There is no place where you make up for your sins. There is no purgatory. In the twinkling of an eye, we shall be changed.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
The local church. Hold on! Hold on! Breaking news! Breaking news! This is Wretched Radio. Who said we can't talk about politics too? Well, I guess you'll be the judge of that. Megan Basham, author of Shepherds for Sale. You can see her work at Daily Wire. She has been a very strong conservative voice on, well, pretty much everything. But Megan, my appreciation for her is because she is theologically stout, but she is very aware of what is going on in political land. So, Megan, you're gracious enough to spend more time with us today, which, quite honestly, is, do you owe us money or something? Why are you doing this? Why did you possibly say that you would do more Wretched Radio with us? Megan, we want to talk, we wanted to a degree talk politics today. But again, I'll tip my cards only in as much as it helps me to be a better churchman or to be a better theologian. You've been watching, no doubt, you're friends with all of these people. Mm-hmm. There has been just a ballyhoo of some sort. Tucker Carlson, who's he's a very interesting character. Ben Shapiro, whip smart. Megyn Kelly, her voice is getting louder. But they all seem to be kind of disagreeing on some stuff these days. Let's start with Israel. What is the issue regarding Israel and the Jewish people that appears to be causing a bit of a fracturing amongst those talking heads?
Yeah, and this is where the theological has very much met the political, and I don't think you can separate those things out. And, you know, so part of what we are seeing is, you know, those Christians, those evangelicals, including in political leadership, people like Ted Cruz, Mike Huckabee, who have long had a political commitment to Israel, but also have something of a theological commitment to Israel. They believe in God will bless those who bless Israel and curse those who curse Israel. And we can debate about dispensational theology, but this is where a lot of them are. And so they take a position, both politically and theologically, that it is in the United States' interests to support Israel. On the other side, you have those, including people at my own company. You mentioned Tucker Carlson, also Matt Walsh, who works for us at the Daily Wire. He's actually kind of on the opposite side of Ben, and we're very open about that as a company. You will see our, you know, most popular hosts and podcast personalities debate it, but he doesn't have that theological commitment. So politically, he would say, I am not interested in supporting Israel beyond what is in the United States' interest. If it benefits us, I am interested in supporting Israel. If it doesn't benefit us, then I am not interested in supporting Israel. So there's no theological commitment there. And so I think that is the really deep debate that you're having that is the legitimate debate. The illegitimate debate is when you bring back in those people like Nick Fuentes, who are just anti-Semites. So they truly do hate the Jewish people. They hate Israel. They are conspiracy theorists of the highest order.
You know what, Megan, I'm sorry. I want to keep going with these characters. You say that, and I'm mystified. I'm mystified. What this group of, look, there's racism everywhere. Every nation has it different, and it doesn't even involve skin color per se. Mm-hmm. What is it about that? Why, like a guy like Nick, what does he say? Like, what is his issue with the Jewish people? Why would you hate an entire group of people? What is it about them?
I mean, that's the age-old question, right? You look back through history and we've been asking that about the Jews for thousands of years. Why are they always targeted? And so for me, biblically, I do think that, yes, there is something to the idea that as God's people from the Old Testament, they are continually targeted. And I have to look at that and go, Lord, the only thing that makes sense to me is that they are targeted because of their association with you. I can't make sense of it otherwise. But beyond that, I mean, I think that these are our historical scapegoats, Jewish people, right? And part of that—
unless this is somehow a part of God's end time plan, I think that people are operating at a different level because they're not operating on a theological level. They're not considering eschatology. They're not considering Romans 9, 10, and 11. They just don't like them. And here, this is my contribution. I think they don't like them because God has actually made them a little better in many ways, specifically their ability to find themselves totally dispersed and yet thrive. It doesn't take but a generation and they just make it work and happen. They're successful. I tend to think that Jewish people just are smarter than we goyim in a lot of different ways. And I think there's resentment toward their ability to be successful.
Yeah. Oh, I absolutely think that's happening. Okay. And that was actually the next thing I was going to say is that I also think there's a simple politics of envy here. We saw the critical race theorists, the Marxists play on that. I think you have your Nick Fuentes is playing on that same sort of grievance, which again is complicated and difficult because there are reasons for young white men in particular right now to have some gripes. And so it's really difficult to separate out, okay, these are legitimate political interests to those who are playing on those legitimate political gripes in illegitimate, sinful ways. And so I think that is part of the debate we're seeing. And then on a broader political landscape, the problem that we have with Israel is it has become the locus of the debate over America First. And the argument that you would have from people like a Tucker Carlson or a Matt Walsh is that they want to put America's interests first. They don't want us to get involved in any more foreign entanglements where they don't think it benefits the U.S. populace. That, I think, is a legitimate debate to have.
So there, you've got Matt Walsh, Tucker Carlson. Now, you wouldn't say that either of those fellows is anti-Semitic, would you?
No, I wouldn't.
Okay, so that's not the divide with Ben Shapiro and Tucker and Matt, even though they're on the same team at Daily Wire. It's really about that zip code called Israel and what's happening there politically. Now, I have read that Matt is not willing to condemn, to speak strongly against that segment that we were talking about last time, and that is those people that are anti-Semitic because we need them on the political right for the sake of their vote. Is that a correct understanding of where Matt is at right now?
I don't, you know, I don't want to speak for him, and I don't think he would put it quite that way. So what he has argued is that, and I think this is true to some degree, and so this is where it gets complicated because you go, there are truth in these positions, and we have to figure out not just what is true, but what is a moral and righteous stand to take. So the debate that's being had is, if there are this many young men following a Nick Fuentes and an Andrew Tate, if it's really, like I have heard as many as, you know, 30%, 40% of young white male conservatives are influenced by these type of media personalities, do we just throw them all out? Do we just say you're gross anti-Semites and we want you out of the party and we don't want your vote? That obviously, if that happens, you don't win elections. So we can see that with the election of Donald Trump, that young men turned out in a very strong way, including young minority men. And so if you throw out their vote, you're not going to win. So I think that someone like a Matt Walsh would say, it's not a question of whether or not we allow anti-Semitism into the conservative movement. We shouldn't. The question is, do we assume that every young man who is attracted to a Andrew Tate or a Nick Fuentes is an irredeemable anti-Semite who we should just distance from.
Well, that's okay. Now you're starting to get, for me, closer to evangelicals and how we're supposed to speak about the issue. Because politics is important to a degree, but being morally consistent to me is far more of a priority. Well, I mean, if somebody is promoting genuine anti-Semitism, they're genuinely believing Adolf Hitler was a cool dude. Shouldn't we be saying, to use your word, at the very least, that is gross? Shouldn't we be saying that?
Yes, absolutely. So the question is, do we say it to, I think it's a question of how do we say it? We say Nick Fuentes is beyond the pale. We can hear out his ideas. We can try to suss out why are people being attracted to those ideas. But what we cannot do is say that he is a formal, legitimate part of the conservative movement. That's one. What do we do with his followers is a separate question. Do we try to appeal to their better angels? Do we try to disciple them?
Yeah. How do we win them to move their thinking from something so extreme and abiblical to something that is right.
But I also want to drill down on something that I think is a problem coming from the other side, and that is the labeling of anti-Semitic anyone like a Walsh who questions, should we support Israel or should we not support Israel? Is it in our interest? Yeah. And so that is the other side of the coin, is you have accusations of anti-Semitism coming at people who I do not for a minute believe are anti-Semitic. I think they just have a different political philosophy of how we do foreign policy.
But it's tricky. We saw that, I think, in the Tucker Carlson, Ted Cruz interview. We're talking past each other about what is the Christian attitude about Israel, because it does get into theology and some rather challenging theology, which is, of course, eschatology. And so we're going to see a difference of takes on the subject. But we're trying to understand the political lines here, who's against whom for what reason, so that ultimately the church can speak into this situation. So moral to this particular story and chapter is, we need to be talking about eschatology. We need to be teaching about Israel. But when we return with our very special guest, Megan Basham, you're going to have to educate me, because I just don't get it. The Candace Owen and Jesus is King business with Megan Basham next on Wretched Radio.
Every man knows what it's like to fight a battle no one else can see. You wake up, you're determined that today is going to be different. This time, you're going to be stronger than the temptation. But then evening comes. And there you are again, right back where you started. You're making promises to yourself that you already know deep down that you're not going to keep tomorrow. That's what Todd Friel gets into very deeply with his resource, Play the Man. It's available right now as an ebook, an audiobook, and video series only at fortisplus.org.
The hat tip to Masters University. You want to send your kids someplace where they actually still teach the Bible? Not just based on a document that they maybe have in a file cabinet someplace, but they actually use the Bible there. The education at the Masters University, not only biblical, but oh so practical. I encourage you to visit masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
You know what's crazy? You've got more computing power in your pocket right now than NASA used to send people to the moon. But most of us, well, we're using it to watch cat videos or argue with strangers online. But what if I told you there's a better way? The Fortis Plus app. I'm talking hundreds of hours of biblical content that'll actually make you smarter and more equipped for the battles you're facing every day. Look, you're going to scroll through something today anyway. Why not make it something that actually strengthens your faith? Download the Fortis Plus app right now, wherever it is you download your apps from. Fortis Plus at fortisplus.org. Thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. You know the feeling. Every morning you wake up and you wonder, how am I going to navigate this weird, crazy, upside down world with biblical wisdom? And that's exactly why Fortis Institute exists. We're your daily partner in standing firm in biblical truth. When you become an ongoing monthly gospel partner, you're not just giving money, you're discipling young men struggling with pornography. You're equipping pastors in small rural churches. You're preaching the gospel to students who desperately need to hear it. Visit fortisinstitute.org right now to become an ongoing monthly gospel partner. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel. Let me ask you a question. When was the last time you actually felt something? Without fear, without shame, without immediately wanting to numb it. If you're living on autopilot, you're not alone. Millions are told the same thing. It's just a chemical imbalance. Hey, take this, you'll be fine. But you're not fine. You're numb. Dr. Greg Gifford gets that, and his new series, Life Without the Numb, is available right now, absolutely free at fortisplus.org. This isn't about ignoring struggles. It's about transformation from the inside out. Here's a question. When's the last time you heard of a ministry making everything free? That's what happened this year at Fortis Institute. For years, we sold our books and our studies, all of our resources, because that's how we kept the lights on. But this year, we closed the warehouse. Everything we produce is now completely free. And here's the opportunity you have right now. Every gift you give through the end of the year is matched. Dollar for dollar match up to $500,000. FortisInstitute.org. Give now and watch your gift double today.
Know your church fathers. Polycarp was a disciple of the Apostle John and the Bishop of Smyrna. He was a staunch defender of orthodoxy, combating the Gnostic heresies. Before his death as a martyr, Polycarp proclaimed, 86 years I have served Christ, and he has done me no evil. How could I curse my king who saved me? This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Jesus is king. Christ is king. Is there a difference? This is Wretched Radio. Megan Basham, it is. This would be another wonder of the world. It is a total mystery. She has volunteered to stay with us on Wretched Radio for another chat about what is going on in the political community, but we want to see the connection to the Christian community and how the church should be parsing this, how the church should be going about the business of seeing what's happening out there. Why are these guys fighting? What are the issues? So that we can enter the conversation. Are you kidding? We're talking about Israel here. Who better equipped to talk about it than, you know, Christians who have been grafted in? Megan, please explain to me, what is the big explosion on the internet about Jesus is king versus Christ is king? What is, I hear those two terms and I go, sounds great, but apparently it's not.
Right. And that's the difficult part of it, because Christ is king. Absolutely. We affirm that. And yet that particular slogan started to be used. I know I interviewed John MacArthur about it before he fell ill. So it must have been at least a couple of years ago when I started noticing that slogan being used by people who didn't mean by it, Christ is king. What they meant by it is typically, I don't like Jews.
Okay. So, because they don't believe in Jesus. Is that the connection
right,
here?
And because, you know, they would say because the Jews killed Christ.
And is it also that they believe that Jews should submit to Jesus Christ? Is that a part of it?
No, because here's the thing. When you have seen it used by these people, it is not evangelistic. It's not saying come to Christ. It's almost a way of saying you're not welcome here. So you're not welcome as part of our political coalition. You're not welcome as part of our nation. So they started, and I would call it a blasphemous slogan, because they're using something that is true and that is meant to honor Christ in order to use it in sinful, unrighteous ways.
Okay, so
in
that's,
order to
that's
attack
Christ
people.
Is king, but right. Is can I use interchange Jesus is king? Does that have the same baggage?
It doesn't. And, you know, same thing with Christ is Lord. For some reason, Christ is King became the slogan of the Nick Fuentes, Candace Owens kind of movement. And so, yeah, I can tell you, we saw Candace sort of throwing Christ is King at, I'll say, Jewish podcasters as her way of kind of trying to insult them or trying to say, I'm different than you because I'm a Christian and you're not. And so in a way, it became a political slogan, Christ is King. And I think that is where we started to have the problem, because even though every Christian can, yes, absolutely affirm Christ is King, when you use it to send a different message than Christ is King, then it becomes blasphemous.
That phrase, Christ is King, and that message, are the people who have used that in the manner that you're describing, mm-hmm. is that a part of the Christian nationalism movement?
So these are complex questions. And yes, it is. So there's a part of the Christian nationalist movement that I, you know, I'm throwing back to my SNL days, is neither Christian nor nationalist. Discuss. But what essentially they do is they use this as part of the Christian nationalist movement. But the Christian nationalist movement itself is it's a complicated subject, because one, you have a legacy media that will just throw it at anybody who wants to represent their Christian
the
morality.
The semantic range makes it impossible. But for for our use, the people who would be more along the lines of, because I'm asking, because I don't know, would like a Christian prince, or would like it to be labeled a Christian nation where Christian values are disseminated throughout the land. So really what we would say is a Christian nationalism, not just you like the country and you say the Pledge of Allegiance with your hand on your heart. No, that's the media does that. Is the Christ the King slogan a part of the more right version of Christian nationalism?
Yes, it is. It absolutely is. But I'll be honest, Todd, there are some people who use it not in the same way that a Candace Owens uses it. And it's like Christian nationalism in that way.
I think it becomes difficult to parse out. Yeah, it does, because I think that they would say that's more of a sovereignty slogan.
Right.
Christ is king, therefore nation should be in surrender to Jesus Christ as king. All right. This is
the Kuiperian idea. Yes. So some people just mean every square inch when they say it.
Sure. Okay. So here's what I'm getting from all of this. There's a reason that there is so much fracturing. It's because, first of all, definitions, the understanding of what these words even mean, mm-hmm. how they're being used, by which people, with which eschatology, with which attitude toward the difference between the land of Israel, the Jewish people, church and state. There's a reason for the confusion. It's just, it's kind of a mess.
It is. And part of what's, I actually feel a little bit like Switzerland because, you know, as a reporter, I talk to some of those who are self-identified Christian nationalists who would tell you, we don't think that we can easily return to constitutional norms because we are so far from those. It would take things that our public today would consider revolutionary to get back to our constitutional norms. But I'm also friends with those who and interview and use as sources those who are diametrically opposed to the name Christian nationalism and to the enumerated goals of the Christian nationalist movement. And so I can sit here and say, as a conservative reporter, you do have two groups that are very much, in my view, talking past each other. So on the one hand, you have those Christian nationalists who I don't take that title because to me, that is just the constitutional norms on which the nation was founded. So to say that you are a Christian nationalist to me would be to say I'm a constitutionalist. But on the other hand, you have those who are arguing that we are so far from the people that the Constitution was written for. We are not that moral, religious people that John Adams envisioned being governed by this set of principles, that we cannot easily return to it. So what you're having, I think, are very big and existential and necessary debates on the right.
Good stuff. Yeah, go ahead.
But a key part of that also is, and again, I keep coming back to this because I think it's important. The fracturing on the right is often, it comes down to impugning motives that I don't always think necessarily need to be impugned. Like on the one hand, you have people saying, well, if you're pro-Israel, you're probably getting paid or you're a Mossad agent. So these are just, you know, ridiculous accusations flying from one direction. And then on the other side, if you are not necessarily just as a political matter saying, I don't think we need to be that interested in what happens in Israel, you have accusations of being an anti-Semite. There are real anti-Semites. So that's what makes this a complicated conversation. And then one final point is that I do see the point of view of those, let's say the Walshian conservative side, where they say the problem wasn't that there's no anti-Semitism on the right or that there aren't, you know, some ugly things under some rocks that if you turn them over, you're going to find them. You're going to find a Nick Fuentes if you turn over a lot of rocks. The problem is there is a difference in level and in influence versus what we see on the left. So if we see on the left, Charlie Kirk getting assassinated, we see assassination attempts of Donald Trump. We see the Antifa protests and riots. We see things like the left celebrating Charlie Kirk's death and the Attorney General of Virginia saying that he would like to see Republicans murdered and their children murdered. So that's on one side. And then we see people like Walsh saying, yes, we have some nasty stuff under rocks on the right, but do we have to take the media bait that the minute they want to bring up Nick Fuentes, and in this case, it was Tucker Carlson. So let's be clear, it wasn't the left that brought out Nick Fuentes, it was Tucker Carlson. But do we have to run to that and make that the story, say, right before an election, which is what happened? So right before those elections.
Yeah, that's pretty fascinating
so
to me.
This because, is the debate.
Yeah, because that anti-Semitism thing, that is pretty nasty business, right, if you don't mind me saying so. Now, I got to ask you though, Megan, on a personal level, you called yourself Switzerland. How does it feel to be in the soft middle? How do you like that?
It's a new position.
Are you
going to
start reading Christianity Today? Is that where you're at now with this new middle Megan Basham?
I know. I'm suddenly third way, I guess. But no, I'm not. But what I'm saying is that I do feel that we are in a bit of a civil cold war on the right. And part of the problem is the assumption of motives all around.
Yeah. Do you think that this is a that MAGA is fracturing because of this debate?
Yes, I do think MAGA is fracturing. And I think that is a significant problem. And I think MAGA is probably going to continue to fracture until we see some real economic wins on the board. And by the way, that goes back to that question of young men. I think if we create an economy and a social structure in which young men in particular are thriving, are, you know, building good careers, are getting married, are able to buy houses, a lot of the attraction to someone like a Nick Fuentes and the politics of envy, we don't like Jewish people because they tend to be financially successful, that goes away. So I think that, you know, a lot of this could be fixed by the Trump administration putting some big economic wins on the board.
Yeah, and I got to toss this in, and I think you would affirm it. We've got to be sharing the gospel more.
Yes.
So that these people get saved so that they're thinking becomes more in alignment with the Bible. Megan Basham, super grateful for you. You have paid your fine, whatever it is that has caused you to stay with us for so long. Really grateful. I'm glad you're doing well. Please stay in the game, stay biblical, stay strong. We're grateful for you, Megan Basham.
Thank you. Grateful for you, Todd.
And until tomorrow, go serve your King.